your small business is booming and ready to expand, you might say something like,
"It's happening!
Booyah!
Yeah! Crushed it."
But if you need someone who can actually help protect your growing business, just say,
"Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there."
And just like that, your State Farm agent can help you get the coverage you need for your new space. For your small business insurance needs, like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Welcome back to Listen to Your Heart. I'm Jerry.
And I'm Jerry's Heart.
Today's topic, Repatha, Evolokimab. Heart, why'd you pick this one?
Well, Jerry, for people who have had a heart attack, like us, diet and exercise might not be enough to lower the risk of another one.
Okay.
To help know if we're at risk, we should be getting our LDL-C, our bad cholesterol, checked, and talking to our doctor.
I'm listening.
And if it's still too high, Repatha can be added to a statin to lower our LDL-C and our heart attack risk.
Guess it's time to ask about Repatha.
Do not take Repatha if you're allergic to it. Serious allergic reactions can occur. Get medical help right away if you have trouble breathing or swallowing, swelling of the face, lips, tongue, throat, or arms. Common side effects include runny nose, sore throat, common cold symptoms, flu or flu-like symptoms, back pain, high blood sugar, and redness, pain, or bruising at the injection site.
Listen to your heart.
Ask your doctor about Repatha. Learn more at Repatha.com or call 1-844-REPATHA.
Yeah, but Liverpool were always going to look for further reinforcements. They're not going to go into the season with just one right back. They'll want lots of options everywhere.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Off the Ball Daily.
Now, today's interview is brought to you on behalf of Matchday at Guinness Storehouse, Ireland's highest Premier League fan zone. And we have a very special guest here. I'm going to do my best to introduce him before it's revealed to you on camera who this is. 7 Premier League titles, 3 FA Cup crowns, 1 League Cup, the European Cup Winners' Cup, and of course the Champions League, as well as an under-15 All-Ireland in Croke Park. It's the one and only Dennis Irwin. Dennis, how are you?
I'm very good, thanks.
Are you well? What are you most proud of there in that list?
I suppose either the first Premier League or the Champions League, but certainly under 15.
I thought you were All-Ireland. The All-Ireland,
For Crease Tree at Croke Park at the age of 15. That was brilliant. I'd already played Croke Park earlier, about 4 years earlier than that, when I marked Niall Quinn.
Yeah.
Cork Schools against, Cork Primary Schools against Dublin Primary Schools, 1-4 to 1-4 in Hurling.
In Hurling, yeah.
So that, I remember that very well as well.
Because he was an unbelievable, I suppose, GA player in general, football and hurling, Niall Quinn. So same with Kevin Moran.
Yeah.
Same with yourself.
Quinny's dad was from Tip, and he grew up kind of more of a hurling man than a Gaelic football man, but ended up, of course, being so good at both. But he was 6'4" anyway.
It did help.
You know, at the age of 14. So
it was an absolute advantage.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
Am I right in saying soccer really only became prominent for you in your mid-teens, about 14 years old, is
it? Yeah, I got selected for Cork under-14 team, went on to Ireland under-15, played in a tournament in France, got beat against West Germany in the final, and then played a couple of Ireland games after under-15s and 16s and got spotted out in Merthyr Tydfil, actually, in South Wales.
Oh, yeah.
By a lead scout, and went across 2 months later, and ended up staying in England since February 1982, a long time ago.
And were you ever tempted to come back to Ireland full time after you finished up?
No, because I mean, I had 4 years at Leeds, 4 at Oldham,
yeah.
12 at United, and 2 at the club I supported as a kid, Wolverhampton Wanderers, Wolves. And at that stage, I was nearly 39 and done. Legs had gone out, and it was just time to retire. And you know, he's an English girl and you spend the rest of your life over there. And to be fair, I mean, Frank lives around the corner for me, Frank Stapleton, Roy's around the corner, Kevin Moran around the corner. There's a lot of us still hanging around there, so it's a good place to be.
You meet for the odd breakfast with Roy, is it still? You were mentioning
that
in the
podcast. Yeah, he owes me the next one, actually.
I can imagine, yeah. But like, people always think, because it's not just two Irish players playing at this massive club, but two Cork lads, that you'd be inseparable, but it wasn't necessarily the case.
No, I mean, when I went across to United, when I joined from Oldham, Brian Carey was there.
Yeah.
Brian from Toker, just come across from Cork City. So that was great, and then Roy came across 3 years later, but different ages, different at that stage. I was married. Liam, my eldest, was with me. Roy was a young young lad enjoying life, I suppose. And yeah, you kind of go have separate kind of friendships away from football. But, you know, we've always respected each other, we've always kept in touch, and it's good to see what he's doing now. It's brilliant.
Yeah, I know, it's class. It's funny, I have this debate with people all the time about, like, the state of Irish soccer at the moment. Yeah. I always wonder, is like, you know, for a tiny country, we have an awful lot of sports, and it depends where you are in the country, but for I suppose, this, we're from the same place, it's outside of Cork, is that, like, you had soccer, hurling, football and rugby. And I was always wondering, like, does that actually make it a disadvantage to make it if you have too many sports? But in your case, you kind of played a bit of everything.
Yeah, no, I can. I never played rugby. It's probably curling was my main sport, I suppose, when I was growing up. That's great because in Ireland, you know, you have to participate in sports. It's brilliant. I think it's, you know, you grow up, you know, you support everything that goes on. You know, if there's a Tiddlywinks World Cup going on, you support the Irish. And it's great growing up in Cork because, as you said, the choice of sports when you grow up is fantastic. And then as you go further along the line, 14 or 15, 16, I suppose the how good you are at each sport kind of dictates which direction you will go in. So, yeah, it can impede, I suppose, sometimes in the fact that, you know, I'm sure there's some great Gaelic football players out there that could have been a soccer player and vice versa. But it's so many. I mean, Ireland's brilliant for sport, isn't it?
I know. I always wonder that too about the people that could have made it if it wasn't for that, because especially your time growing up, like, I think Cork won something in hurling every year between 1974 and 1986, and we're previewing this week the league final against Tipperary this weekend. And it's not since 1998 of Cork won a league, but your time, like, I can imagine that hurling was so dominant because in Creastory in the secondary school you went to
Gaelic football. That was more
Gaelic football. But there's no soccer.
No soccer, no, not allowed, banned.
That's hard to imagine. Like, that has sort of made it the spite of the school system.
Yeah, but it's the way it was. You know, I mean, it was concentrated on Gaelic football or hurling. I mean, I grew up and my mum's still there, like 30 yards from the Bears Club.
Yeah.
And Jimmy Barry Murphy was my hero. You know, the hurling team in the mid-70s that won the treble, you know, with Ray Cummins and Shawnee O'Leary and Jimmy Barry up top. I grew up in that. You know, Cork Hibs and Cork Celtic were flying at the time, early 70s, mid-70s. It was just a good place to be in Cork as a sports person, really.
I just realised the summer of 1999 was unbelievable for you particularly with your own treble, and then Cork, nearly doing a double.
Yeah. I know. I mean, I suppose we've been blessed and Cork doing so well. Obviously a barren spell. Hopefully, in the next couple of years, the hurlers can get up and running.
Yeah, it's looking good.
So it's looking good, looking better. A few young lads have come on the scene.
It is, it's very much looking good. So you were a centre-half.
Yep.
And we shared a club in common in Cork. We both played for Everton.
Yeah.
To the same distinction.
I love playing for Everton. It was, you know, the pitches up by the airport. I still got some friends that I'm on WhatsApp groups with and all from those kind of days. And I go back there and trying to raise money for an artificial pitch up in the airport because it's badly needed. So in the midst of all that. Great to be still in touch and still doing the best they ever can. And they've got a young girl's kind of teams now up and running. I think they played the first game recently, the senior team. So that's good to see as well.
Yeah. So you're over in Ireland this week with, you're doing an event with Andy Cole, I believe.
I am. Coley, I bump into him every now and again. Yeah. And obviously great memories. I think about 7 years with Coley between, I think he joined in 95 to 02 probably. Yeah. I think he left the same year as me actually. Fantastic striker. I think he's still second in the Premier League history without taking penalties or scoring goals.
That's it,
So incredible, really. Never took penalties, thank God.
You were great.
I put my arm around him and said, thanks for that, Coley. But yeah, we're doing something for Guinness, Diageo, in the storehouse tonight, viewing of the Forest game. So it's brilliant that Diageo are sponsors of the Premier League, and it's good to come across. It really is.
You had a decent partnership with Andy Cole. I was looking this morning ahead of our chat. It was like you set him up for one of his goals in the 9-0 against Ipswich. Right. During that famous game at Old Trafford. And then you set him up for a goal in Europe too. He had a lovely header. And then he returned the favour in Europe to you as well with one of your goals. So you kind of had a nice partnership. It was like, I wonder who, because you had loads of candidates. It was like, who's the best centre forward you played with?
Yeah, it's hard because the four in the treble year, I mean, they're all fantastic, all different. Yorkie Coley, Teddy and Ollie, all different players. You know, you kind of looked at Yorkie as a holding up player and Teddy, whereas Ollie was an out and out goal scorer and Coley was as quick as the wind. So they were all different in their own ways. Yeah. You know, Coley was that quick, he'd create chances for himself. I'm really surprised he didn't play more for England, actually, but I suppose there was a lot of competition there at the time. But yeah, I mean, because of his pace, you just had to knock it down the channel sometimes, and he'd make a bad ball into a good ball and make me look good. So that was good. But we just had a great team and great morale at that time, you know, under a great manager, and it was a great time to be at United. We're talking, yeah. I was with him last week, actually, and we were talking that we actually won the treble in the Cliff, which is literally one pitch, 1.5 pitches. You fast forward 25, 30 years, and they've got state-of-the-art, you know, training grounds now, but just to be involved in that little area where you were in it together, you felt you were all in it together. It was brilliant.
Was there a gym at the Cliff?
Kind of a gym. You wouldn't really call it a gym, but the physio took you out if you were injured. The physio took you out and you know did running with you and did weights with you, even though they probably weren't qualified to do that. That's how a small a squad or a whole what the manager. I think there was assistant manager, a couple of physios. That was about it, really.
Yeah, it's amazing.
It was mad.
Yeah, because you would think, well, it's this massive operation, but it wasn't really necessarily the case because there was, like, weirdly, it's certainly against Bayern Munich in the Champions League final, there's kind of an underdog feel to it. It was like Bayern felt like the favourites, and he went and did it without Roy Keane and Paul Scholes as well. I was looking back at some of your goals. I think you said your favourite goal that you scored for United was against Wimbledon.
Yeah,
in Selhurst Park with the drop of the shoulder. I love the 1-2 with Eric Cantona against Spurs.
Spurs, yeah.
But Jesus, there was one goal you scored against Wrexham in the FA Cup at Old Trafford.
Yeah.
And it's a flat volley in the edge of the box.
That's right.
Into the back of the net.
Yeah.
I was like, how did that not qualify?
I know. Can you believe what Wrexham are doing now? Yeah, they went one up as well. The audacity to go one up at Old Trafford. I can't remember what year that was, but I scored two that day. And that was the first penalty, one was a volley. Yeah. Good times.
Yeah.
Good times. My right foot was always decent. Left foot was, I had Giggsy as my left foot, really. So that helped out an awful lot. And yeah, we were very attacking side. So that played right into my kind of game where I suppose as a fullback in this day and age, you got to be able to go forward. You got to be a different avenue of attack. And if you play for any really good side back in the day, you have to be comfortable on the ball. I think every fullback has to be comfortable on the ball now.
Yeah.
For any side in the Premier League, it's that competitive.
Would you like to play nowadays?
I had my time. No, I had my time. I enjoyed my time. You know, we had a good laugh. We could go out and enjoy ourselves. I'm not say I can't say for sure that that's the case in this day and age where they kind of can't be seen to go out because of, well, cameras and social media and all that. So no, I enjoyed my time. I had a fantastic 22 years over there playing football, and I wouldn't change anything.
Yeah.
Winning and losing is part and parcel. Injuries is part and parcel of a footballer's career, footballer's life, but I thoroughly enjoyed it.
It was amazing your free kick records, right, for club and country. And like I always think of the one at Anfield where you're 3-0 up and it's go back to 3-all and you're 2 feet off the ground and goes into the top left. It's an amazing goal. But then like David Beckham has the audacity to come around. Like how does that conversation happen that, sorry Dennis?
I don't know. It just kind of, we used to practice in training. And it's one of them, you either got it or you haven't got it. You can't.
What do you mean for free kicks?
Free kicks, yeah.
How did you know you had it?
Because of practice. And if you practice, you can get it up and over the wall and down. You know, you've got that whip that David Beckham has or modern day Trent Alexander. They've just got that knack of getting the ball up and down with a bit of pace, and it's actually can't be taught.
Really?
You can practice it all you want, but if you haven't got it in your locker, you just haven't got it. So that's why you'll see the same players kind of take free kicks.
But I wonder how did you even discover you had it? Because if you're starting off centre half in Ireland, and then when you're signed by Leeds, you're still a centre back. It was Eddie Gray moved you fullback, was it?
Yeah, no, I went across to Leeds as a centre half, and more or less, I mean, I played centre half for the U team, a U team that included David Seaman and John Sheridan and Scott Sellers and John Scales and Terry Phelan. To name just a few, there's a few more in there that I probably can't remember. Tommy Wright, and then obviously didn't grow tall enough for the. Don't forget the old Division One in England and English in general had a big centre forward. Everybody
always
had a big centre forward, and you needed to be 6 foot plus to be a centre half, and I was never a bit like Gary Neville. Gary Neville started off as centre half, played centre half in the United U team, but you end up playing full back. Paul Parker was the same. He joined United in 91 as a centre half and ended up playing full back for the rest of his career. That's the influence the manager had. Yeah. Paul, you're playing there, and it's just, I think, not so much in this day and age. I mean, you still need a big centre half in there, but certainly you can get away with it to more of an extent these days, not being so tall.
Well, it's a nice segue into Alex Ferguson. So I have two questions regarding the relationship between the two of you. So the timeline is Eddie Gray moves you to fullback. Billy Bremner doesn't fancy it. You end up at Oldham as a right back on the All Astro. 1990 is an unbelievable year. You get to the semi-final of the FA Cup, losing the replay to United, losing the League Cup final to Forest, but it's an unbelievable year. Then you go to United. At this point in time, you've either played centre-half or right back, but never left-back.
Never left-back, no.
It, there comes to the point where Alex Ferguson says, Dennis, you're going left-back, and you had no experience in it whatsoever.
Well, I played the first year right-back, and left-back was shared between Lee Martin and Clayton Blackmore and a couple of others. Sharpie played left-back sometimes. And I said, first year, and then we won the Cup Winners' Cup over in Rotterdam in 91, and I played right-back, and then 3 months later, I'm left back for Manchester United because Paul Parker comes in as a centre half, moves to right back. And the manager said to me, because my left foot was decent enough. I mean, it's not like a Sharpie left foot or a Giggsy left foot or anything like that. But it was decent enough. And the manager says, you're going to move across there. And if the manager said something back in the day,
I heard you say that recently, right? But would you have ever had the type of relationship, or could anyone on that team have said, Alex, do you mind if I have a word there? Why are you doing this? Why do you want me to play left back when you know I'm right back?
No chance. Absolutely no chance. I think what he said went. And it was just his style, you know what I mean? He knew I was could defend. I think you had to be able to defend in those days as a fullback, a bit more than the modern day fullback. He knew I was more than comfortable on the ball, right foot and left foot. So he must have had the confidence. I have to ask him, actually, the confidence and push. I will do next time I see him. Confidence to push me across the left back. But don't forget, in front of me, I had Sharpie for quite a while and Giggsy for like 10, 11 years. Yeah. So they were obviously helping me out. It would have been more awkward, I think, if, you know, in the modern day game, the player on the left is normally a right-footed winger now. Yeah. Isn't he? When you see it, they all cut in. It would have been more awkward if Giggsy was right-footed or Sharpie was right-footed. But as I said, they helped me out, and I was more than capable of my left foot anyway. So all ended well.
It was all right in the end, yeah. You regularly mention Lee Sharp, actually. Like, we all know about Ryan Giggs, but Sharp's, I wouldn't say he's slightly forgotten, like certainly by a certain vintage, but like his quality maybe is a little underrated.
I mean, he was there when I was there, came before me. I think he signed up from Torquay for like 100 grand or something, nothing, peanuts. And he was fantastic. He was like a breath of fresh air. He was very lively. He tried to take Giggsy under his control, but the manager was trying to hold him back a little bit. But he was a great player, loved life, enjoyed himself, and had a great career at United. He was there for it must have been 7 years or so, and then moved across to Pennines. I think he went straight to Leeds, actually.
Leeds in 96,
he?
He rejected a new contract and went to Leeds.
That's right, and then ended up in Sampdoria and played a few different places.
Under David Platt, wasn't it?
David Platt came back
to Bradford City.
That's right, and lives in Thailand now.
Does he?
Yeah, he's tried to pub in Spain, and he's been around, really good golfer and all that, but he lives in Thailand now.
I heard he was trying to make a professional Gareth Bale style, all right?
He probably was.
And then the other question I have in terms of Alex Ferguson yourself is the day he says you're taking penalties. So Steve Bruce had his record turned a bit sour with the penalties, and he was missing a few. And is that right? And then Eric Cantona.
So Bruce, he was penalty taker, and then...
Did he miss a few?
He didn't. I know he might have. I mean, he might have missed a few. But obviously, Eric came in November '92, and he kind of took over from Brucey, because Brucey wasn't getting any younger. So when you get a bit older, the manager kind of leaves you in and out of games, as human nature will dictate a little bit. So then Eric took over. Eric left in '97, and we signed Teddy, and Teddy missed his first three pens. The last of them being at White Hart Lane. And the manager said to me, you're on penalties from now on, which I was more than happy to do.
I imagine,
defender, chance of scoring goals. Brilliant.
He scored over 30 goals for United. Like, that wasn't just penalties in pre-games.
No, a lot of I only took penalties for, well, probably three or four years because, as I said, Brucey and Eric right up to 97. So, yeah, no, it's good. I didn't mind that.
I don't know if you ever looked into your penalty-taking technique, but I was, again, I was watching back this morning and I was actually, I never noticed this. Is that you're walking about 10 yards backwards, the opposite direction, with the head down, and then you quickly turn around and take it. I presume you're just thinking about where you're putting it, because it's an unusual style.
Yeah, no, it was like, I suppose you always had a favourite side, and the safer side is when you put it to the keeper's right as a right footer. It, you know, you're using your... It's only when you open your body up a little bit that you're taking a bit more of a risk. So, but in this day and age, obviously with nothing to hide, cameras, everything's on TV these days, you have to be able to go both sides. But I didn't mind taking them. You know, I think I had a fairly good record. I was confident in taking them. You know, I'd have to ask Coley actually why he didn't like taking them. He said to me it's 12 yards. He didn't like shooting from 12 yards. He was more of a poacher. But I didn't mind it at all.
Self-confidence is never an issue for you?
No.
Why is that?
I don't know. I suppose it's just in my nature growing up, I suppose, a little bit. You know, there's nothing wrong with confidence in football. I think you need it.
It's incredible, but I'd say it's not universal by any means.
No, not at all. You have different temperaments in games and, you know, obviously a lot of help there this day and age because, I mean, let's face it, there is an awful lot more pressure on professional players these days, particularly with social media doing the wrongs. That wasn't the case in our day at all. I mean, mobile phones were just coming through in the mid-90s, so we missed most of that. And we could just get on with it, and there wasn't. I mean, the Premier League now was huge. It's global. Yeah. It felt when I was playing that we used to tour out in Southeast Asia and Australia and China, but now with particularly in America coming on board, it's very global, and we go out to America constantly pre-season, and we're doing so again with the Premier Cup this year out to America again. I think we play West Ham, Everton and Bournemouth out there. And it's just global. It's huge. And you look at all what's happened at Wrexham and Birmingham City, and it's you know, America fully involved now in the game of football, English Premier League and below. Below that is amazing. Incredible what Wrexham have done. And if they go up again this year, what a story that is.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. But you're all club old and it's gone the opposite way.
Yeah, which is a shame. But they're in fourth.
Went
up to see them last year up against Rochdale. They're in fourth this year, so they'll be in the playoffs. So hopefully they get back up. Because once you start getting up, you can go on a bit of a roll. You saw that with Wrexham, Stockport to a certain degree. You know, they're up there again challenging to try make it into the championship. So once you start getting the ball rolling, and all of them have got a good fan base as well, hopefully they'll get back up.
Tired of listening to the same old playlists or podcasts over and over? Maybe it's time to mix things up. Try something new. Hit explore. Avoid the blah and the boring. Before you even put your headphones in, add some fun in the mix. Say yabba dabba doo to a bowl of Pebbles cereal and enjoy by the spoonful. Fruity and cocoa Pebbles cereal. Less blah, more yabba dabba doo. Head to your nearest grocery store to buy Pebbles cereal today. The Flintstones and all related characters and elements. Copyright and trademark Hanna-Barbera.
If your small business is booming and ready to expand, you might say something like,
"It's happening!
Booyah!
Yeah!
Crushed it!"
But if you need someone who can actually help protect your growing business, just say,
"Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there."
And just like that, your State Farm agent can help you get the coverage you need for your new space. For your small business insurance needs, like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Psoriatic arthritis symptoms can be unpredictable.
I had joint pain, and I couldn't move like I used to.
I needed relief.
I got Cosentyx.
It helped me move better.
Cosentyx secukinumab is prescribed for people 2 years of age and older with active psoriatic arthritis. Don't use if you're allergic to Cosentyx. Before starting, get checked for tuberculosis. An increased risk of infections and lowered ability to fight them may occur, like tuberculosis or other serious bacterial, fungal, or viral infections. Some are fatal. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms like fevers, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough, had a vaccine or plan to, or if inflammatory bowel disease symptoms develop or worsen. Serious allergic reactions and severe eczema-like skin reactions may occur. Learn more at 1-844-COSENTYX or Cosentyx.com.
Ask your rheumatologist about Cosentyx.
With leading networking and connectivity, advanced cybersecurity and expert partnership, Comcast Business helps turn today's enterprises into engines of modern business. Powering the engine of modern business. Powering possibilities. Restrictions apply.
You played against some unbelievable wingers and forwards in your time. Like, you know, you name checked the likes of Hadji and Stoichkov and John Barnes. Yeah. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
I was wondering, right, do any names spring to mind? Did you ever consistently get the better of a really like high profile winger or forward? Do you ever have anyone in your pocket, so to speak?
No, I used to. It was all, they were all challenges because they were there for a reason. There was predominantly wingers back in the 80s and 90s in the English leagues were quick. Their job was to get down the sidelines and cross the ball to the, as I said, every team had a big centre forward.
Yeah.
A big bustling centre forward, whether it was John Fashanu or Lee Chapman, you could go on and on. Shearer was brilliant in the air. You know, there's so many players that were so good in the air that I suppose winger's job was to get the ball in as quick as possible. Mm. And you could kind of read what they were going to do. And, you know, you could kind of counteract that a little bit. It was the ones that could drift inside, were good in the air, were clever, went to pass and went not to pass. They're the ones that caused you the biggest problems, as in John Barnes, and particularly when you went into Europe, Hadji and Stoichkov were incredible players. Yeah. And they're the ones that caused you a lot of problems. And that's where you needed probably a midfielder when you sent him inside, somebody like Roy to try kick somebody, or Robbo back in the day. But they test you. They're the ones that have got a little bit of pace, but got the cleverness as well to go with it. Yeah. So they can go either way. And you look at wingers now that particularly play on the opposite side. That probably be. But Stoichkov was ahead of his era because he was a right footer that played on the left.
Inverted winger.
Inverted winger. That like back in the day. And that's probably why. Kadji used to play kind of in the middle and drift out your way. Henri was fantastic, but thank God Gary Neville got him most of the time. I mean, Zola was a great, great player as well. Yeah. I'm going back in the day and all that. People forget how good a player little Zola was at Chelsea. And they all cause you problems because they're all very, very clever.
You mentioned Roy there. And like, look, you get asked about him all the time for obvious reasons. But I do wonder what he was like up close and personal as a footballer. Now, you know, it's very hard to separate the man from the footballer in terms of what he brings to you as a captain, and he brings everybody along with him. But just purely as a footballer, say for argument's sake, if he was a really quiet fella and he wasn't a captain type and he wasn't shouting, just him as a player, what was he like?
As a player, well, he came in and he was a typical, I suppose, midfield player back in the day. He was a box-to-box player.
Yeah.
Reminded me very much of Brian Robson. Great goal scorer, awareness of when to drift into spaces and score goals. You saw that at Forest when he went across from Cove Ramblers. You know, there was always a goal in him. He was always a threat. He was aggressive. He was quick. He got around the pitch. And then as he started to mature, and I suppose start thinking about the game a bit more as you get more into your 20s, became this incredible holding player that became, yeah. I mean, he became captain, but his game kind of went to a different level in terms of on the field. The way he kind of, I suppose, patrolled that midfield area, protected the back four, and let, particularly great combination with Scholes, he let him get on with the 50-yard passes and knew what he was good at and what he wasn't good at. And I don't think there was any better in the Premier League. And they're talking about great Premier League players. And I know it's so hard, but he would be right up there with me because good to have in your team, would support you, would really get the lads up and running and going for you. And brilliant to just reading the play. You know, I used to always say, if you threw a ball up between two players, Roy'd know exactly where it was going to land.
Well, that's interesting.
And I think for a midfield holding player, I think that's half the battle, knowing when to sniff danger out, knowing when to go forward, because of course you can't just sit there in the whole game, when to go forward, and just not just looking after his own game, but obviously as a captain, what was going on around him as well.
Well, he was intelligent. You hear a lot of from ex-teammates, it was the
weight. Very intelligent.
The weight of his pass.
Yeah, very intelligent.
Was incredible. Yeah. And like, we're dying for a world-class midfielder now, from the Irish perspective, I'm talking about now. And was he just a freak of nature or what? Because
They come along every now and again. We were blessed, I suppose, in the early 90s with Andy Townsend, who was another great midfielder, and John Sheridan. John Sheridan was a fine midfielder as well, from Sheffield Wednesday. But Roy had a bit of everything. You know, he was quick. He could easily get around the field. He was fit, and he was aggressive. He wasn't afraid to put a tackle in, and he could score a goal for you. And essentially in the 90s, that's all you wanted a midfield player to do. And then, as I said, you know, you go into his career, right into his 30s, a holding midfield player could read the game. And I suppose just let, you know, the forward players get on with it. And that's his job. But obviously he did a lot more than that.
You mentioned some other great Irish midfielders there in your own international career. He had 56 caps, four goals, I think. Were they all free kicks?
No, I took a penalty against... Yeah. Was it Croatia once? I had a penalty against Croatia. Scored it. Yeah, no, the rest were free kicks, I think. But I came late to the scene because I'd obviously was at Oldham and just missed out in the 90 World Cup.
Was you gone into the PFA team of the season in the second division for Oldham and you had just got to the Cup semi-final and the League Cup final. Were you disappointed to miss out on Italian 90?
Yeah, I was. I mean, I didn't think of it at the time, but looking back on it, because Oldham were flying in that year. But I think Jack had a settled squad and didn't change too much. So anyway, I enjoyed it back in Cork, streets in Cork, enjoyed Italian 90. But I was late on the scene. I didn't play till made my debut with Daly Monk Park, actually.
What age were you when you made your debut?
I was 24. So I was late on the scene. But I had a great 10 years there with Ireland, really was. You know, 94 World Cup was unbelievable, really.
I remember my father telling me about the Romania game in Italian 90. He looked out in the street and there was literally no one. It was a Monday afternoon nobody went back to work. But you mentioned USA 94, that was the tournament you went to, of course. You played the first two group games, including one of the most, if not the most famous Irish victory of all time against Italy. Am I right in saying you're suspended for the last group game?
Suspended against Norway.
But then you didn't play against the Dutch in the last 16?
I didn't play against Gary Kelly got in and I didn't play. I was obviously gutted about that. Terry Phelan was left back. Didn't play. I don't know. That's one of them things, isn't it? But I just thought, you know, Italy was unbelievable. Mexico, we battled, even though, you know, the elements were against us and we managed to... Squeeze John Aldridge came on and scored a goal, managed to squeeze in. It was a weird group, actually. I think all teams finished on 4 points. Yeah. I think we got through because we scored more goals than Norway or something like that, and then went into a hat and got drawn against Holland back down in Orlando. So that wasn't in our favour. There was no luck of the Irish there. I never played. I didn't play that game, which was hugely disappointing. No, you wouldn't expect to come on because when you're chasing a game, yeah, you'd always bring forwards on. So it petered out for me, the World Cup.
56 caps. I would have always thought more.
As I said, I was late on the scene. Yeah. And, you know, we got beat in the playoffs in 99 in Turkey on away goals. And it was out in Basra and it was a long trip home and it stuck us out there. We had to get a ferry back and I just thought, I was done a lot of travelling with United at the time and I just thought it was the right time to go. So I finished in 99.
There was that moment, was it April 98? Which, I mean, we were talking about the brilliance of 99 for you, but 98 was tough because Arsenal won the league and the cup.
Yeah.
And United, and then Mick McCarthy had those, you know, now infamous words, you have to prove yourself. Does that stick with you years later? Or do you move
no, on? It's just kind of, it happens. I'm kind of, it was, you know, it's gone. You know, I'm not one of them to, you know, hang on any grudges or anything like that. It's just part and parcel of being a footballer. You know, some managers, you kind of see eye to eye with and you work with it. You know, I played plenty of games under Mick. His system he wanted to play was initially three at the back, which, you know, suits some players and didn't really suit me. And it just, again, you know, the disappointment of... there was loads of disappointments along the way because... You know, 91, 92, we should have qualified for the Euros.
Yeah.
You know, 95, 90, we lost to Holland in the playoff at Anfield in 95.
It was Jack's last game, wasn't it?
Jack's last. Yeah, probably was, actually. Yeah. 97, 98, we lost out to Belgium qualifying as well. And so we chuck in 99, 2000, you know, losing out to Turkey in a playoff. You know, there's a lot of big disappointments in there as well. So you'll find that with football that, you know, for all the good times, the kind of bad ones kind of stick with you, because 95 with United was, you know, we lost the league in West Ham, and 6 days later we lost the cup final to Everton. They kind of stick with you more.
Do they?
Yeah, the victories.
Yeah, I heard that a lot, actually. Well, like, in hindsight, it was an amazing time for Irish football, because it was three major tournaments in, what was it, eight years?
Yeah, it was incredible.
6 years. And then you look at the state of the Irish team now. Like, would you still follow it a lot?
Yeah. It's just, I always say it'll come back.
Do you think it will?
Yeah, it will.
I'm a bit worried about the future, to be honest.
I mean, rugby's made a huge step here in Ireland. You know, I grew up watching rugby with, you know, Ollie Campbell and Fergus Slattery and Mike Gibson and all them. And I've seen it through the years, and then you fast forward to, you know, what Ireland have done in the last 10 years in particular. So rugby's done really, really well. Hurling and Gaelic football will always be strong here. So there's a lot more competition, I think. And it's probably a bit more awkward for young players to go across to England now. So I don't think that helps an awful lot.
With the Brexit rule and all.
So I don't think that helps an awful lot. But I'm fully sure that it'll swing in roundabouts. And, you know, hopefully it will do. It's going to take time. You know, I remember growing up in the early 70s, and Ireland always nearly qualified. And, you know, we had great players back in the day, Brady and Johnny Giles and all them. They were brilliant. You know, Steve Highway, you know, I grew up with all them, Don Givens, but never quite made it. So I think we're back to that kind of era. But I always think you'll have a chance, because I hate saying this, but you look at the numbers that qualify for European Championships or World Cups now.
It's surely going to benefit us.
Yeah, I think you've always got a chance. And it's good that, like, even the League of Ireland now is taking a bit of an uptake, with Duffer going in at Shelburne and doing really well last year. Yeah. And Shamrock Rovers, obviously, in a Europa conference this year, you know, getting to a playoff and being very unlucky as well against, I think they lost to Outram penalties to Molde or something
like that.
But it's good to see that League of Ireland's on the up as well, because you want Ireland to compete at soccer.
Definitely. Like, we have live commentary of League of Ireland games every Friday night, and the interest is growing all the time. Sure, Cork City are back in the Premier Division.
Yeah, drawing too many games at the moment.
We're doing all right. In research, I was looking back and I was thinking, geez, why did he never go into coaching or management? And there was an article when you were 35, you were still at Man United, I think. How come it never happened? Because in the article you said, I wouldn't mind a bit of management.
Yeah, it was like 35. I was doing World Cups and European Championships for RTE at the time.
I remember that, yeah.
And I took my coaching badge a couple of years later, CMB, and just didn't know what to do when I'd finished, because by the time I'd finished at Wolves, I was nearly 39. And I just wanted a bit of time off with my family, and that meant kind of trying to take weekends off. So I said I'd have a year gap in the coaching, and never went back to it, and kind of stuck around with the media for quite a while, and then started doing other things and ambassadorial work for United a few years later, and kind of never looked back since then, never got back to coaching and all that. So, but listen, I can't complain. You know, the life I've had, you know, playing football and being in around football since is brilliant.
What's life like now for you?
It's good. I can't complain.
Yeah.
You know, I've got a good wife behind me, Jacqueline. I've got three good kids. They're all healthy and happy. You know, they're all very sporty. You know, they all go down to the gym. They do half marathons. You know, try kind of be there for them as much as possible. And I think the job of what I've got at the moment helps me do that an awful lot. Whereas I think if I'd obviously on hindsight, if I got into management, that probably wouldn't have been the case.
Yeah, fair enough. Who's your favourite fullback these days to watch?
It's a tough one.
It is, isn't it?
It's almost a
purposely tough question, because I feel like the position's changed a lot.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of the fella Bournemouth can play, Kenny Kirkhouse.
Oh, Kirkhouse, yeah,
yeah, yeah. I mean, there's every chance that he'll move on in the summer. I think modern day fullback, you look around, is it the fella Robertson at Fulham? He's more than capable as well.
Oh, Anthony Robinson, he's
more than capable. You look around, even these teams now, they produce really good players, and you know that they can buy players as well and nurture them a bit more than, I suppose, the big teams. You know, they're looking for the finished article. But I mean, listen, Trent Alexander, I'm obviously not a big Liverpool fan, but he's got going forward, And, you know, he's got a Dave Beckham-esque kind of right foot, to be fair to him. He's more than capable of scoring free kicks and being involved in attacking play. You know, I always thought Luke Shaw, I think injuries have held him back an awful lot. You know, he's just got himself, well, he's nearly fit. So hopefully he'll come back in. But whether he plays a left wing back or left centre half, that we'll have to wait and see on that one. Probably left centre half might suit him a bit more now. He was always more capable, but I always keep an eye out for fullbacks when they come to Old Trafford and just like see what positions they take up and all, because it's different, you know, the way they play out of the box now. And you know, it's, you'd have to you know, work that out yourself and, you know, adjust, I suppose, as a fullback. But yeah, listen, the best fullbacks in our era would easily be as good as the fullbacks in this era. It's just, and the fullbacks before me, the best fullbacks before me would have played in any era. It's as simple as that. There's the game changes. It's still a simple game, but the tactics and
players adapt as well.
Players adapt. Yeah,
I always think that too, that you'd be able to adapt in an era.
Have to adapt. If your manager wants you to play you a certain way, you have to adapt to that, whether you like it or not.
I know we're tight for time here. The Premier League's back in action. It feels like it's been away for the Yanks. Manchester United against Nottingham Forest, you'll be
doing that tonight.
Just a quick word on how do you think Ruben Amorim's doing?
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously taken over in a difficult position. And I mean, he'll be first to admit he's probably learning the Premier League as he goes along. Because I don't care. It's the most physical league in the world in terms of a different physicality. When I was there, there was a lot more tackling in my day, where now it's like you got to be able to run. Unless you're a super, super player, you got to be able to run. And it's full on. It's 100%, you know, it's technique wise, it's improved an awful lot. But yeah, it'll take him a time to learn. And United have gone through some difficult times, particularly at home, where I think the pressure is more on you at home, where you look at losing at home to Bournemouth and, you know, Fulham and, you know, teams like this year. And it's been hard, really has. Yes. But there's glimmers there. You know, take him two or three windows to even look like a team that he wants to play. But we have to get the recruitment right. I think that's fair to say that the last 10, 11 years, that's been the biggest problem down at Manchester United. But I think he will be a success, but it'll take a while. But you look at Forest. We play Forest tonight. They finished 17th last year.
They're unbelievable. You know what I mean? FA Cup semi-final, third in the league.
Yeah. They're tucked in third place. I think they've got a bit of a gap. I think there's every chance that it's going to be five English teams in Champions League next season. So they've got every chance of making that, and that'd be incredible, really would.
All right, as the Guinness Storehouse celebrates its 25th birthday and its global partnership with the Premier League, the matchday experience marks the end of the first chapter of a 4-year journey as the official beer and official non-alcoholic beer of the Premier League. Dennis Irwin, thanks a million for your time.
Pleasure.
If your small business has a problem, you could say,
oh, just my luck.
But you should say,
like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
And we'll help get you back in business. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.